Blog Talk Radio.
Waking up to smells of burnt rubber, smoldering campfire, and barbecue sauce. I was there. Cheering on the drivers you love and booing the ones you don't, while watching them battle the baddest track in NASCAR. You can bet I was there. Escape reality for a weekend at Talladega.
Experience the Geico 500 April 29th through May 1st. Call 877-GO-TO-DEGA or visit TalladegaSuperspeedway.com.
Hi, I'm Cameron Haley, driver number 13, Matei Tundra for Thor Sport Racing and the Camping World Truck Series. You're listening to the Pit Stop Radio with Tim Despain.
Live from Talladega, you're in the Pit Stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, and your Apple Podcast.
Good evening from Dega Nation. I'm Tim Despain alongside my good friend, CEO of Speedway Digest, Mr. Stephen Wilson. It's race week in Dega. We got a big show planned tonight, but before we get everything going, let's bring on the official reverend of the Pit Stop, Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson, from out there on the West Coast, Mr. Reverend Jim. Reverend, how's everything out there on the West Coast? It's beautiful evening, bud.
It's nice today, actually, and things are going pretty good. Still a little bit under the weather, but we're getting there little by little. You know how it goes. Doctors with a million tests and trying to figure out what's going on. So, anyhow, how's things with you?
Everything's going great. I feel better than I've ever felt after my back surgery, Reverend. I surely do, and I appreciate your prayers, bud.
We've been praying nonstop about that, and I'm glad to hear it's going well because there's nothing worse than back trouble.
Yes, sir. I know. So, and we pray that everything turns out well with you too, Reverend. You got the floor, bud.
Well, make sure your air pressures are right and that all your lug nuts are tight.
Let's not get in any trouble, okay? Make sure you got five lug nuts on too, y'all.
Though they say we both got a few nuts loose, but hey, we'll worry about that another day.
Yes, sir.
Let's get this thing going. I know you got a busy night. Lord, we come before you, and we thank you that we can still laugh and still enjoy, and that we know all these things come from you, Lord. We ask your continued protection over all our drivers, all of the crew members, all the people involved with auto racing, all of our friends, all of our many, many friends all over the nation who listen not only to this radio station, but also who go to the races, who listen to the races, who watch the races. We're one big family. So please protect us all. We thank you so much for sending your son, Jesus Christ, to die for our sins so that we would have an easy entrance into heaven by just believing in you. And we ask your protection upon all of our soldiers, all of those who put on uniforms to protect us, and all those who watch over us. So be with us in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen, Reverend Joe. show, as always. I've been saying it for two and a half years or whatever since you've been the Red Zone Show. Great invocation. Thank you very much. And let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media and your website, my friend. You got the floor.
Thank you. Our website is ontrackwithjesus.org. And my email is ontrackwithjesus@aol.com. My phone number is 951-232-7630. Follow us on social media on Facebook, and you can actually pick me up right through Tim's page. So please follow us. We post scripture there a couple times a day. If you have any questions about it or involved with it, give us a call. But we posted it there, so it's easy to see, something for you to read easily a couple times a day without having to pull out a Bible. So God bless you all, and be with us every week for the show. Don't miss us.
Amen, Reverend Joe. Thank you very much, and we'll be praying for you, bud. If you need anything, you just let Suzanne or I know, and tell Miss Betty, Suzanne and I both said hello.
Well, she says hello back to both of you, and we love you guys, and wish we could get to Talladega, but that's not in the cards this week. And but we'll be talking to you next week, and try to keep the lug nuts tight, and watch how much you inflate things. We don't want to get in too much trouble.
Yes, sir. Exactly. Which I will be there. I'm going out Thursday, and I'm pretty sure my little iPhone camera, if I see a wheel that does not have five of them glued on, I'm pretty sure I'm going to take a picture of it.
Well, you know, did you? I know you got a busy show tonight, but did you follow a little bit about this whole thing with Tom Brady, and the you know, they just decided he's got to sit out four games, and in order to make that easier on him, basically what his team did was cut his pay for the four games to only $1 million a game, I think it is, but they're giving him after that a $28,000, $1 million signing bonus on the fifth week.
I seen something on it, Reverend Joe, but I really didn't read into it. I'm glad you brought that up. And you know, with our sport, you know, like you would say, Reverend, NASCAR is a little bit different than, you know, some of the stick and ball sports of like what Larry McReynolds always says. He always stick and ball sports and mentioned the Larry Mack coming up at the bottom of the hour with a President of the Super Speedway, Grant Lynch, also. But yeah, I didn't really read that much into it, but I've seen some of that stuff, Reverend.
Well, you know, the other thing is, like, Tony Stewart's been a friend of mine for many years. And I was proud of him in the fact that he felt that and he spoke up. And what I was looking at as a driver myself for many years and all the rest of it was, it's one thing if you got five lugs on the wheel glued on, and when you slam the wheel on, one goes flying, and they don't expect you to have to put it on as long as the other four are tight, or three, or whatever number. But they weren't doing that. They were gluing up three and four lug nuts. Tony was completely right in saying he was concerned about safety. He wasn't knocking NASCAR. He was just saying safety concerned them. Someone said to me today, well, does that mean since they changed the rule back to what it should have been, they got to give Tony Stewart his $35,000 back?
That's a good question. You know, and Reverend, I listen to a lot of serious XM. And Reverend, I know you're not 100%, but if you'd like to stay on a few minutes, you can talk a little bit of news with us, you know, to the bottom of the hour. But first, let me say this. At the bottom of the hour, I think I might have said it earlier, we've got from Fox Sports and Fox Sports 1, Mr. Larry McReynolds joining us. Also, President of Super Speedway, Mr. Grant Lynch. And at the top of the hour, we have driver in NASCAR Xfinity Series from McLeod Motorsports, Mr. P.J. McLeod will be joining us. We want to give Chris Knight a big shout-out for that. But Steven's on here. Reverend, would you like to stay on a few minutes?
Yeah, I can stay on a few minutes.
Okay. All right, Steven, would you like try to explain to Rev? I don't know if Rev knew that they are going to try to police everything on the five lug nut deal, and that's going to be hard to do. you know, because NASCAR's new officiate system with the cameras that can only see the right side of the car. How are they going to – well, Stephen, I'll just let you and Reverend talk about it. Stephen, Reverend Doug, Stephen Wilson.
Hey, Steve. You will bring me right in on top of this, and that's fine. That's fine. Well, you know, on top of, you know, last week, obviously, Tony Stewart speaking out about the whole lug nut issue that was and we've seen where teams not only were just hitting three lug nuts or four lug nuts, but there was even controversy as to the fact of some of these teams were only hitting two lug nuts on these tires, and we saw that was an issue. Obviously, you don't want that to happen in a place like Talladega. You're running 3 and 4 wide, sometimes even 5 wide in that draft, and there's 35 cars in that draft, and that happened up front. You're going to collect 28, 30 cars before somebody can ever, you know, figure out what's going on. So NASCAR obviously made that change. They made that change very, very quickly into this. You know, Steve O'Donnell, he did issue this statement, and this is a statement from Steve O'Donnell and NASCAR. NASCAR has been closely monitoring the aggressive strategies on pit road. Safety is an area we do not take lightly, as our record has clearly indicated. It's important for us to have a system in place immediately and address the lug nut installation. While we work alongside the industry to develop the best long-term solution. So basically, you know, NASCAR is going to watch these. What they're going to do is they are going to look at this after the race. NASCAR, the penalties are as follows. If found pre-race, it counts as an unapproved adjustment. The team will have to start at the tail of the field and must make a correction immediately. Tires intended for use without all 5 lug nuts glued to the wheel result in a written warning and must be corrected immediately. If found post-race, the first offense is a minimum of a $20,000 fine and a crew chief suspension of 1 race and probation. Multiple offenses will result in the escalation of penalties. Now, NASCAR not only has done that, but NASCAR has continued to go on and has said that this can potentially take you out of a chase scenario. So if you were, and they've updated the chase scenarios in the World Book where you collect your points going forward, if you were to win a race, and they find these lug nuts have not been installed properly, and they find you, or you are penalized post-race inspection, whether at the track or in the R&D center, they can also potentially take that win away, which would be credited towards your automatic induction into the chase later on in 2016 after Richmond. So not only can you be fined monetarily and be a 1-race suspension for your crew chief, that win credit can potentially take you out of the chase contention following Richmond. So there's a lot on the line for these guys out there. Obviously, on the right side of the car, the camera system is very high tech. NASCAR is going to look into this on what they can do with the limited number of officials, not always going over the wall, the reduction in that. You know, the NASCAR is going to continue to look at what they can do on the left side of the car, and I'm sure that they'll continue to see what they can do in the future. But, you know, as of right now, this is the best thing going forward, and NASCAR has gone ahead and made this immediate starting at, you know, they have started at Talladega next week. Or this weekend.
You know, Steve, having been in the pits a lot, it's been this year through three events, and been involved with this for a little over 50 years with auto racing in general, racers will always push the limit. They will always shove it as hard as they can to see what they can get away with. In this particular case, I think the safety issue is so much more important. Now, you mentioned a couple of things that I just wanted to reiterate with you. You were talking about Talladega in particular as to the multi-car accidents and such. But having been at raced at many, many levels myself. One of the things that I can remember over the years in all divisions, Saturday night racing and at the higher levels, wheels getting loose from a car, whether something broke or the lug nuts weren't right or whatever, have caused more injuries than cars flying into the stands, for instance, because a bouncing tire that's doing even 100 miles an hour gets bouncing, it clears fences like nothing. And a tire and wheel's heavy. If it comes down from 25 feet in the air on an individual in the stands, it can be deadly. So I'm very glad they jumped on that, because I don't think NASCAR at that point had totally realized how bad it was being abused. Now, in every pit stall and walking up and down pit road all through the races are officials. It's not that they're not there. So they're going to be looking, and have in the past been looking, at what's glued up and what's ready to go over the wall. But even in talking to some of the officials at the beginning of the season and asking them which way this is being policed, some of them shrugged their shoulders because they really weren't positive of what was expected. And we all felt that five lugs on the wheel should go over the wheel, over the wall, glued on. How many had to have tightened was kind of up to the team at the time. But, you know, these things are made, the wheels themselves are pressed and made for five lugs. There's five studs there. You leave a wheel, a lug nut off, you've got to rebalance the tire in order that it won't vibrate just from the balance being off. And also the grip isn't the same. If you want to allow them to run three lug nuts, then you're going to have to make a wheel that's made for three lug nuts and probably a bigger stud. I was listening to Chad Knaus today, and he mentioned that a couple of things he thought they should look at was the thread count on the studs. Because I know on my car, I run a coarse stud, which takes less revolutions to tighten it than the ones they run on the cup cars, which are a finer thread. So there's a lot of little things, but if you're going to start running three lug nuts, you've got to have a wheel that's designed for that. And I think it got out of hand. I think Tony Stewart brought it up because he's really into safety, always has been. And, you know, why make a crew chief or a tire changer decide how many lugs belong on a five-lug wheel, when if it's all five, it's all the same?
Yeah, and, you know, to your point, you know, that tire that's going over the wall, the tire and the wheel going over the wall and mounted on that car is approximately 80, 85 pounds, give or take. So, you know, that's a heavy instrument going across the wall, and that thing break loose. I mean, we've seen those things roll down a 1,500-foot back stretch, or, you know, a 1,200-foot front stretch, or, you know, all the way around corners before, you know, 100 miles an hour. So, you know, they can't be dangerous objects that are flying around the track. And obviously, from the safety aspect, going over the walls, you know, as NASCAR has said in their updated memo to the teams, that, you know, not only, you know, in effect to some of the others, they've also said that, you know, a loss of a wheel due to improper installation will be a mandatory minimum of a four-race suspension of the crew chief and tire changer and tire carrier of the wheel.
Yep.
So, you know, there's huge implications into this that, you know, teams need to buckle down. They're a little too far, and NASCAR had to come in and obviously had to rein this back in. Because, you know, we've heard all year long, Brad Keselowski, Jimmy Johnson, you know, a litany of other drivers, you know, name a driver out there in the field that's either been leading, going for the lead, top five, top ten, had a solid day or had a good run going, only to find out that, you know, they've had a vibration, find out that, you know, they've had two lugs pinned down, three lugs pinned down, and, you know, the tires come loose, and that was the cause. I mean, You know, at Atlanta, I believe it was Brad Keselowski not only once, but twice. Jimmy Johnson has suffered the same fate. Others have suffered the same fate. And you would think by the team, you know, giving their drivers bad runs, putting them multiple laps down, that would be enough to curtail this. But obviously, you know, they feel that that 1/10 of a second per lug was, you know, worth the risk of, you know, getting out in front of somebody on pit road at first to getting a better run during the day.
Well, I understand that as a racer, but also the fact that this whole thing of win and you're in causes guys to experiment. And one of the places they can experiment is with the lug nuts, or was anyway, because of the fact that they were already in the chase. So if they ended up with a 25th finish, it wasn't taking them out of contention for the championship. And I think even though every guy's out there to win, I firmly believe that that risk, well, now the risk has become even much stronger. I think NASCAR will throttle a little bit of this new rule back a little because, you know, if a guy is, if the tire changer is tightening the lug nuts and on the fifth lug nut, for instance, at that moment his gun breaks, his air gun breaks. The jackman, see, he turns to the wall to grab another gun. The jackman drops the car because he already moved away from the wheel, and away goes the car, missing a lug nut, which I think NASCAR will look at those things on a case-by-case basis. But when you go over the wall with a tire that's only got four lug nuts glued to it, there certainly isn't an intention of putting on five. And I was glad to see them say they need to have five. They need to be put on properly. And also, I have a lot of friends that are tire changers. That scares the heck out of a tire changer. He can't afford to lose his job. They get in enough trouble when they accidentally miss one, much less, you know, the big fine and the suspension could put them out of the business completely. So I think it's good that NASCAR's put the onus on everyone involved. But I think as time goes on, there'll be individual judgments. But there are people there watching. There are officials there watching. And also, we tend to go faster on the left side than we do on the right. So, thusly, watching the left side does become more critical because that's when you're really getting down to, are we behind or aren't we? You know what I mean?
Well, obviously, you know, as we go along, and maybe at the beginning, you know, there's going to be a little bit of stringent overlook onto this. Obviously, as these wheels are mounted and balanced and they're taken to their pit stalls, you know, the officials can observe everything that is going on pre-race to these events and making sure that they are being glued on properly. And that's exactly what this rule addresses, is that the attendant use of the race tire must have all the lugs glued onto it, and that, you know, you'll be issued a written warning to have it corrected immediately prior to the installation of the tires or going across the wall. You know, but obviously as the, you know, as you made the example of a broken gun and going back, you know, out on track, the official can obviously make that call to the tower and let them know that, you know, the gun broke and the driver left pit road. And if nothing else, it would be a return to pit road to make those corrections. Of course, it'd probably be resulting in a loss of a lap or, you know, several positions, depending on if you are under caution, et cetera. But, you know, that would be the extent of your penalty, because your penalty is being served by the basis of you either losing positions or losing a lap already. I highly doubt that NASCAR would continue to penalize somebody in a situation like that, especially in a mechanical malfunction such as that. And they wouldn't in that case, because of the fact that, you know, you came back to pit road and you fixed and you addressed the penalty based on NASCAR's assessment to do so.
I fully agree. And we also have to remember that there's been things that have gone on this year that a lot of people haven't liked. But all in all, NASCAR has been extremely safe for many forever, and they always take whatever actions necessary to make it safe. So, I mean, we've even got fire suits on the flagman and on the assistant flagman and on the pace car driver, helmets, all these things. I mean, these are things you didn't see 10 years ago. These are things we haven't seen these people getting injured because they didn't have on them, but NASCAR went and put the rule in ahead of time before the accident, before the problem. And they've always been very good that way. So I think this thing just got stretched a little out of proportion. I think I've always, like I said, I've always admired Tony Stewart for the fact that he has never worried about the penalty for speaking the truth. And maybe he went a touch. I didn't think he went so far in what he said. I thought he was pretty delicate about it. But I don't know if you saw the race day interview with him on pit road, and they questioned him about it. And in the middle of laughingly questioning him about it, they said to him, "Didn't you just say something that could get you another fine?" And he said, "Well, if that's the case, that's the case." So it's not that he's a multi-gazillionaire and wants to throw away money. He just was trying to make a point. And I guess we've all found out that his point was well taken. And I think that NASCAR deserves a lot of credit for the fact that they realized it. They probably were already looking at it. And then Sunday, it was so abused, it wasn't funny. And I know a guy like Tony Stewart certainly doesn't want to end up injured because somebody else's wheel falls off. I think he's had his fill of that, and he knows what it's like to be injured. So I think going forward, it's just going to improve all the way around, and people are going to be a little bit more thoughtful and, you know, also realize that the guy who glues the lug nuts on is not the guy who's mounting the tire on the car. So everybody's going to be policing everybody in their own pit crew, which I think will do the trick.
Yeah, I do too, Reverend. And
we'll let you guys get on to what you got to do.
Okay. We've got a caller come in. I think it's probably going to be Larry Matt, because Suzanne's got him over in Stringer. But anyway, yeah, Reverend, thank you very much. And, you know, I want to later on, I want to get Stephen to talk about Stephen was at Richmond this weekend, covering the weekend event. But, yeah, I mean, that was great. That was great points. Gentlemen, and Reverend Joe, we thank you very much.
God bless you. Say hello to Larry Mack for me.
Yes, sir, I will. God bless you too, Reverend Joe. Take care out there on the West Coast, bud. We'll talk to you next season.
All right.
All right, we'll see.
Talk to you next week.
All right, bud. That was our Reverend out there on the West Coast. And, Stephen, we've got from NASCAR on Fox and Fox Sports 1, Mr. And he is also a big Alabama fan. From Alabama, Mr. Larry McReynolds.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Larry Mack, how you doing tonight, bud?
Good. That may be the most powerful introduction I believe I've ever had. I don't know that I've ever had that before. I'll have to write that one down.
Thanks, Larry Mack. And Larry, I want to go ahead and get this out of the air before we go talking about racing. I just want to let you know Grant's going to come on too, and we're going to let you and Grant have the floor a little bit, and I'm sure – I know I got a couple of questions, and Stephen does too. But I'm a big Auburn fan. You know that. But I want to go ahead
I'm
and write
sorry.
This too.
I apologize for you.
Go ahead and write this down, Larry Mack. I'm going to give you a big shout-out, Roll Tide.
Well, that wasn't big, but at least it was a Roll Tide, so I'll let you slide. But, you know, pretty excited about the upcoming season. Big game to kick off the season out in Dallas, University of Southern Cal. That's you know, they seem to always start the season with a big game. Wisconsin last year, you know, two or three years ago, Michigan. So it's going to be a big deal kicking off with the Trojans from out there in Southern California.
That's going to be a real. That's going to be a good game, Lambert. And Larry, we've got a three-way Mr. Grant Lynch. Let's bring Grant in for pit stop. Jim Spain, Stephen Wilson, and Mr. Lambert Reynolds.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Grant, how you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing real good. And hey, Larry Mack.
Hey.
Hey, I'll trade your opening opponents right now, even money.
Well, I guess I need to know who that opening opponent is you're speaking of, but who would that be?
We're playing Clemson.
Now, see, I'm a little embarrassed. Who is we?
I'm Auburn. I'm War Eagle, baby.
So you're Auburn, too. Okay.
Both,
well,
both
all you need to do.
Sorry, Larry Mack.
We got a lot of sound effects going on. Well, just take a page out of Nick Saban's playbook.
That's right.
You can beat Dabo Swinney, no question in my mind. And actually, I'm probably going to try to make it down to watch the Auburn and Georgia game. Now, you may go, what in the world am I going to an Auburn and Georgia game? Well, I'm proud in one respect. I'm a little kind of ashamed in another. My youngest daughter, Kendall, who will be graduating high school here next month, had been accepted to schools all over the Southeast, including Tuscaloosa, but she chose to go to Athens. Of course, Georgia does not play Alabama this year, and they're probably very glad considering how bad Alabama beat them at Athens last year. But
yeah,
they do
right.
play Auburn at home, and it's one of the games I'm going to get down to watch. So, you know, I'll just be very biased because Auburn is in the state of Alabama. I'm a very unusual Alabama fan. I do not want to see other teams beat Auburn. When they played Oregon a few years ago for the national championship, I was a huge Auburn fan. I didn't want to see the Oregon Ducks beat the Auburn Tigers. Long as we keep that national championship trophy in the state it belongs, I'm okay. If Alabama's not in the running, I'm okay with Auburn taking that trophy down at Auburn as they did a few years ago.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm a transported Tar Heel, as you know, down here to Alabama, and so we were neutral till Ashley went to Auburn and Sarah went to Auburn, and we were sealed at that point. But I still started pulling for Alabama many, many years ago when Bear and Bobby Bowden would play teams from out of the South, and most people in the South and didn't do that. See, you could cheer for a Southern team that was playing across people across the nation. So it's a good rivalry. Some people take it too far, but I think you're about where I am on both sides.
Yeah, kind of like our man Harvey Updike. He took it a little too far, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I thought so, too.
Yes, he did. And, Larry Mack, I want to thank you again for taking time to come on the show. And, Grant, I know, you know, this is Ray speaking here today, and I know you're busy. I know Russell's about to pull his hair out. I've been texting him a little bit. He's about ready to pull his hair out. But
I'm not pulling my hair out, I'll tell you that.
Me either. We don't have that problem.
I didn't mean to go there, gentlemen.
I'm sorry. Well, you said it.
I did.
Well, some people, they just change the color. We ours just gets less.
That's exactly right.
But anyway, I've got my good friend and co-host Stephen Wilson from CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com. Stephen, I want you to get in the conversation because Larry, Matt, and Grant, they talk football. I don't want to get on a fight here on the show. Stephen, go ahead.
Yeah,
we're all good except one day a year, right there around Thanksgiving.
Right.
It's all good.
That's right.
Well, I just won't say anything about, you know, who my team is, and we'll just get to talking about racing around here. Obviously, coming to Talladega this weekend, big weekend down there after we come out of Richmond and Carl Edwards back-to-back, and not only Bristol but Richmond, but you know, when you get into Talladega, it's a much, much different story, and this question is just for both of you guys. When you start looking at this weekend, the game just changes when you get this back-to-back stretch in the short tracks and just come to a place like that. When you start looking there, where does the game change? What do these guys have to do, and what does their mentality change when they get to Talladega, and especially start prepping themselves for when we get there for 3, 4, 5 wide racing in a draft that is inevitably, as we all know, is probably going to involve some kind of incident that will probably take out some very, very good race cars?
Well, we hope we have a race like we had there our very first time to go there with our NASCAR on Fox broadcast in 2001 when Bobby Hamilton won a caution-free 500-mile race. And when the race ended, we knew Bobby Hamilton won the race, but it took several minutes to figure out who finished second through about 30th, because that's how tight the pack was when they came across the line. But, you know, I'm fortunate to work with three drivers that's had a lot of success there. Michael Waltrip has won there. Of course, Michael's also going to be in the race on Sunday driving the number 55 car. Darrell Waltrip, who won there, and most recently that joined our Fox team, Jeff Gordon, who has multiple wins there. And Jeff said on our Fox conference call this morning that even above and beyond Daytona, that Talladega is the most stressful mentally race that he ran throughout his entire career, coming there twice a year. And you go there with the mentality, we want to win the race, we want to do good, we want to run well, we want to celebrate in victory lane. But you go there knowing that you're controlling about 10, 15, maybe 20% at best of the outcome of your day. As I've said many times, it's 188 laps, it's 500 miles, and you can have a flawless day for 187 and a half, maybe even 187 and three quarters of a race. And you can have perfect pit stops, best strategy, fast car, good handling car, and you might lose it coming out of that trial oval headed down there with the checkered flag waving. We've seen that many, many times. We saw it with Kevin Harvick beating Jamie McMurray back in 2010. We saw it, of course, in 2009 with the Brad Keselowski-Carl Edwards situation. But it's one reason I looked just earlier today, putting my notes together for the weekend. Our last 10 races there, we've had 9 different winners. And you can lay all the stats out you want to. You can work on stats between now and the green flag on Sunday. Throw them out the window. It means nothing at that racetrack. Every track has a tagline. You know, we have the too tough to tame. We have all these. But I think the tagline for Talladega that Grant and his people came up with several years ago, and I use it all the time, it's big, it's bad, and it's fast. And I think, and bold. I think that pretty much sums it up right there.
Tim, I would agree with Larry, and this is a good opportunity for me to listen to an expert, because he can answer that with pure facts about the track and everything else. And I kind of go from emotion because I've been here so long. But the one thing he was talking about is the fact that at the end of the race is here, everybody that's on the lead lap's in the game. And that does not happen anywhere else, even Daytona, really. I mean, here, people win this race and never win another race, and they're in the running. And I think when Larry talked about the tension on the drivers, part of the problem is they're racing people they don't race for the win every week. You know, they're not in the running on most of the normal races. They're 2 laps down, 3 laps down. So I think it just changes the whole environment for him. And I've never heard a driver yet that said Talladega was his favorite racetrack. They might say it in victory lane briefly, and then they come back to their senses and go back to where they used to be. But it doesn't matter, because I've said this too. When they do what they can do here, it cannot be duplicated at any other racetrack. We're tied for the record on the three top series, some of the three top series in NASCAR for closest finishes. We hold the record for lead changes at 88 lead changes in 188 laps, give or take.
Mm.
And 29 different drivers led a lap in that race. And when people start bragging about 20-some lead changes, we had 88 and 188 laps. That's one every 2.5 laps or something. That's the most amazing statistic in the history of NASCAR. So But it's not everybody's cup of tea. I realize that too. But that's why we try to do so much here to focus on the racing, focus on the competition, the great show on the track, and then give everybody the exciting social atmosphere that's Talladega as well.
Well, one thing Russell Branham's working hard at is sending out information. We're getting a lot of information right now, and something I read just about an hour ago, which is kind of unheard of at most racetracks we go to. We've got 14 different previous winners that will be in that field on Sunday. That's pretty much a third of the field. That, again, I think that's just another check mark of how unpredictable that race is on Sunday.
Yeah, Russell's doing an awesome job for us, Tim, as you know.
Yes, you guys brought up a very good point. I mean, I think you look at the competitiveness of the track itself. You just look back just a couple of years ago, an unheard of, basically, team, underfunded Front Row Motorsports, both with David Reagan going to Victory Lane and David Gillen following him right in second place out there. But, you know, obviously when you come to a place like Talladega, you've got to talk about Dale Earnhardt Jr., a guy that just knows how to run in the draft out there. And when you come to Talladega, that seems to be a special place, not only for the fans, but for him in general to go to Victory Lane. And they wrecked a car in Daytona that has been special for him on these restrictor plate tracks. They've rebuilt the car. They're bringing it to Talladega this weekend. What is the predictions of him coming there this weekend with that car that got wrecked at Daytona earlier in the season?
Well, and the nickname of that car is Amelia. I think it's named after Amelia Earhart. Yeah, that car got tore up pretty substantially at Daytona in February, but Greg Ives and that bunch, they built it back, and it's the car they unload. You know, the apple obviously didn't roll too far from the tree, and Grant said no driver really says Talladega's his favorite track. Well, I actually worked with two that started talking about Talladega about a month before we'd get there because they love going there, and that was Davey Allison, who won there, I think, three times, and Dale Earnhardt, who, good Lord, how many times did he win there? 11 times, 12 times? And Dale Earnhardt Jr. is the same way. And the people in Talladega love him, and he loves that racetrack. And I see it when he gets caught up in a wreck or blows an engine. We start seeing people file out of the grandstand. It's like, whoa, whoa, where are you going? Wait a minute. We still got more race. But they came there to see Dale Earnhardt Jr. run, and he loves that place. And, you know, even though he understands, like the other 39 drivers, that it's still a lot of things out of your control, obviously, Hendrick Motorsports has an unbelievable restrictor plate program with their engines and with their cars. And, you know, if you had to say today who's the guy, you know, before we even get down there, you have to put him pretty close to the top of the list, if not at the very top.
I'd agree with Larry just real quick. And I know that Earnhardt's have always just dominated Talladega. His dad is an all-time winner at 10, I believe, and Dale's, I think, a 7. And I tell folks, you know, while I try to be neutral, and Richard Childress is one of my best friends in the sport, and I've always pulled for Richard's cars, if you run Talladega and there's an Earnhardt in the race of any name, first name, you better be pulling for it.
Yeah, the only thing that might would possibly be more popular on Sunday, it'd be borderline. Two things that would be pretty popular on Sunday above and beyond Dale Earnhardt Jr. winning, and that would be if Chase Elliott could win that race, driving that 24 car. And we know he's going to have a fast race car. In fact, no team has sat on a pole for a restrictor plate race since the fall of 2014 except the 24 car. Sat on a pole for the Daytona 500. And I'd have to believe another pretty popular win for a multitude of reasons would be if Austin Dillon could pull that number three back in Victory Lane, something we've not seen since the fall race there of 2000.
And my final question to you guys, and I'm going to hand you back over to Tim, is, you know, we can look at stats all day long. We can look at everything in the world. But I just talked a little bit about David Reagan doing what he did. You look at Brad Keselowski, what he did with Phoenix Racing just a couple of years ago. Just unheard of names, unheard of teams. If there is a dark horse in the field that's going to enter into this 40-car field on Sunday, who is it going to be, and how do they make it happen?
Boy, that's a tough one there, because I think, as Grant said, we always use the little phrase, if you're in it, you can win it. We've seen it at Daytona, and we've seen it at Talladega. many, many times. I mean, it's still hard to beat these top teams no matter where we go, but when they get out there in a big pack and in the draft with this restrictor plate, it's absolutely the equalizer. You know, I think Regan Smith, driving for Tommy Baldwin Racing, I think he's one to keep an eye on. Regan has won there in the Xfinity Series, and that seven car finished in the top 10 in the Daytona 500. I think David Regan, of course, he's won there in Cup. He's won there in Xfinity Series. I think he could be a dark horse in BK Racing. But I keep an eye on that 55 car with Michael Waltrip. That old size 14 shoe, it pretty much knows how to mash the gas there, and he understands the draft about as good as anybody. So I think Michael may be another one. I know the people with Peak Motor Oil that sponsored him told him, we'd love to go down there and sponsor you, but are you going to run in the back or are you going to try to run up front? Michael said, depends on what your agenda is. They said, we want to run up near the front. He said, okay, we got a deal then.
Well, I'm going to hand you guys back off to Tim. I appreciate you coming on here tonight, Grant. You guys have a great weekend. Larry, you know, always a pleasure when you come on the show, and I look forward to you always on the Fox broadcast every weekend. Thanks a lot, guys.
We appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Okay. Thanks, Stephen. And, Grant, my first question is, you know, I'm not far from you the way the crow flies from my subdivision to yours. Have you got supper ready yet?
Actually, I just finished eating with the White Flag Club. They have a Tuesday night thing where all the retired White Flag Club members and everybody else that's in the club comes out here, and our staff sits down with them, and we have a big dinner and kind of get the week ready. And they do so much for us here. I think they're the best volunteer group that I've ever been associated with that do so much for us out here. So I'm sitting outside right now on the phone. I'm going to go back in there when I get through.
Yes, right. That sounds good. Yeah, everybody out there with the White Flag Club, Grant, they're awesome. But Larry, I don't want to keep you too long because I know your time is into as well as you, Grant. But Grant, would you let everybody know what specials you have this weekend as far as ticket packages? Maybe kids 12 and under, I think, are free. Correct me if I'm wrong. Any specials for the military?
Yeah, kids free. Friday and Saturday, and then on Sunday they get $50 off any ticket in the house. We have awesome military pricing that varies by grandstand, and then of course we've got a $25 collegiate ticket that's out there for everybody. Basically, is we have unlimited free camping at Talladega. We're the only racetrack I know that has free camping, and we have hundreds and hundreds of acres of free camping, so you can bring your own food and beverage in on all days. No glass bottles in your soft side cooler. So there's all kinds of ways to come see us at Talladega, and there's all kinds of packages you could buy. So I would suggest you call Talladega, you go on the internet and go to TalladegaSuperspeedway.com. You can look at everything we got. It's an awesome website, and we're getting ready to make it even better probably after this race. And you can see there, and then call us at 877-GO-TO-DEGA, D-E-G-A, and the number 2 on your phone. And that can get you to our agents that can sell your tickets. But we're ready for everybody. The weather forecast is good. A little iffy on Sunday. We've dealt with it before. We've got the equipment here to deal with it. It's a 2.6-mile track, but we got a lot of equipment here, and we'll keep buying that jet fuel to run those drivers.
Well, I'm going to do a little promoing for Grant, too. It's one of the few race weekends where you can see a race every single day. Of course, we've got all the practice for the Sprint Cup Series guys and the Xfinity Series guys on Friday. And sometimes the practice sessions can be about as exciting as the race itself. But then the ARCA Series, they race on Friday afternoon. And then Saturday, that's a pretty full day because we have qualifying for Xfinity and for the Sprint Cup and then the Xfinity Series race on Saturday afternoon. And, of course, the big 500-miler on Sunday. So there is a lot going on all 3 days down there.
And I think there's a special person running that race in there, Larry Mac.
Well, yeah, it's a big weekend for the old Mac Reynolds household. Of course, Brandon won the ARCA race there. I spoke about the ARCA series. He won the ARCA race back there in 2012. And James Whitener of JGL Racing, he's kind of going what he calls a young gun theme. And he's putting different young drivers in his number 24 car. He's had Matt Tift in it. He's had Corey LaJoy in it. and they've elected to put Brandon in that 24 car on Saturday in the Xfinity Series race. So we're pretty pumped up about that. We've had a lot of people that have stepped up. John Rich of Big and Rich, who I think actually has a concert Saturday night in Enfield, doesn't he, Grant?
Yeah. All you need to see Big and Rich on Saturday night. Larry, all you need to see him on Saturday night is your Sunday Geico 500 ticket, and that gets you in on Sunday night, Saturday night for that as well. So that's pretty good. I don't know how I missed that. Larry Mack, you've been reading your notes. You're the best in the business.
There you go. But John Rich actually has an apparel company that has a huge line of apparel. It's called Regneck Riviera, and that's going to be on the side of the car. And then we got a pretty cool deal on the hood of the car. It's Monster Truck, not the Monster Truck you're thinking about. It's the Monster Truck Rock and Roll Band. They're kind of a 2016 ZZ Top type of band. They're actually going to be down there, and they're on tour right now. In fact, I think they're in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday night, and then they're going to make the trek across the country from Dallas and be there for the race weekend. And of course, their dates right now, you can go to ilovemonstertruck.com. But this is a pretty cool little rock and roll band. They've got a new single out, says Don't Tell Me How to Live, and it's off their new album, Sitting Heavy. But that's Monster Truck. They're on the hood of the car. So we got all kinds of musicians that's participating in Brandon's run on Saturday.
And Grant, which I know both y'all need to go, but Grant, the new sandwich, what is this deal we got with the hot dog on the Texas toast and cheese? I don't know if Larry Mack finished yet, but we're gonna have that in the
as long as it's not a banana and mayonnaise sandwich. I'm about over that sandwich.
it's not banana mayonnaise. It's the Talamento Dog Witch. It's two hot dogs, big hot dogs, sliced in half, placed on toasted Texas toast. Then it's covered with three kinds of cheese, one of them being a pimento cheese, and it's four wide in the Texas toast.
Well, it's kind of like the racetrack, big, bad, and bold.
That's exactly right. It's the Talamento Dog Witch. Our chef came up with it. It's the companion to the big one on the boulevard that we introduced last year, which was the pulled pork surrounded by 1 pound of ground beef rolled in panko breadcrumbs and Parmesan cheese and deep fried. Neither one of these things are going to make the heart-conscious menu of any restaurant in the world.
Well, are we going to get it one day in the media center while we're out there?
We'll get you one brought to Pitt Road, like Mac. Fix you up down there. Wherever you are, we'll fix you up.
Well, gentlemen, I appreciate it, and I know both y'all got to go. Grant, Larry, let me start with Larry Mack. Larry Mack, you have your last thought for this weekend at Talladega.
Say that. I'm sorry. Say it again.
Do you have any last thoughts for this weekend at Dega?
No, I mean, it's hard to believe we just came off of a little bit of what we'd call a short track swing. Three out of our last four races, they've been at our three short tracks at Martinsville and Bristol 2 weeks ago, and, of course, Richmond this weekend. And, you know, we're seeing some of the best racing that we've seen in a long, long time. And I go back to our finish in the Daytona 500 with what Denny Hamlin did through turn three and four to get his first Daytona 500 win. And I have no reason to believe we won't see more of the same this weekend at Talladega. It's, you know, it's 188 laps, it's 500 miles. But it very well, more than likely, is going to come down to what happens off turn four and down through that trial. There's a reason. They want to say it's because they wanted to make those seats premium seats down there to start-finish line. But there's a reason that start-finish line is not in the middle of the trial and all the way down there past the trial, about halfway between there and turn one, because we've seen more lead changes between the center of that trial and down there at that start-finish line than you can imagine. I mean, I go back to Brandon's win there in the ARCA series back in 2012. I'm not sure he was actually leading when he crossed the center of the trioval, but he was leading when he got down there to the checkered flag. So it's a huge difference maker. You wouldn't think it would make any difference whatsoever, but it is a huge difference maker in the outcome of this race.
Yes, it is. That's a big difference. And Larry Mack, Grant, do you have any last thoughts to Larry before we turn him loose? Because I know he's got
I just want to say, Larry, I respect you so much, and you have been a class act your whole career in this sport. You do your homework. You come prepared for everything you do. When you came and spoke to the people that we ask you to speak to, you really get the information together, and you do a great job. And I'm proud to call you my friend, and you're an asset to our sport. I just want to tell you that.
Well, I appreciate it, Grant. I mean, I feel so blessed and so fortunate to be able to do what I do. Hard to believe I've been in this sport now over 35 years, but yeah, it's my way of making a living, and it's been a great living for me and my family. But it's truly, without using the cliche, it's a labor of love to be a guy there from Inslee, Alabama, that I think I actually had to write a few checks just to get my high school diploma to get them to get me out of there. I feel so blessed and so fortunate, and to me, it's about the people in our sport, and that's certainly the people like yourself, Russell Branham, everyone there at Talladega. I've been in the Carolinas for 35 plus years, but it's still my home track. And heck, I'm gonna come a day early. I'm not gonna wait till Thursday. We're gonna drive down tomorrow afternoon. I want to get there early and get ready for the weekend, especially with Brandon running that 24 car on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, come on down. And Tim, thank you for having me on too. I'm gonna go back in here with the gang.
Okay. Grant Lynch, thank you very much. And Larry, thank you very much. And Suzanne and I will see y'all this weekend at Talladega.
Well, we'll be there, Brandon, and I always like to tell everybody out there listening, love for you to follow me on Twitter. It's at LarryMack28. I try to respond to as many comments, as many questions as I can. And you'll love my avatar. It's me standing in the University of Alabama Crimson Tide locker room right there beside the Big A. So, again, that's at LarryMack28.
Oh, my goodness. I knew you were going to bring that up, Larry.
I just
you got
Larry
to.
Mack. I know it, Larry.
Thank you very much, and we will see you this weekend at Talladega, bud. Safe travel.
You got it. Y'all take care. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. See you, Larry Mack. All right, Stephen, that was Larry Mack from NASCAR on Fox and Fox Sports 1 coming up here at the top of the hour. We ain't even had time to take a commercial, Stephen. That was an awesome interview there with Larry Mack and Graham. But, yeah, coming up here at the top of the hour, we've got driver from McLeod Motorsports, Mr. B.J. McLeod, NASCAR Xfinity Series. He's going to come on and give us his take about everything. But I've been wanting to talk to you about Rick, but we had all this going on. We hadn't even had time to go through everything. But anyway, your thoughts on Rick, on like the last lap pass, teammate Steven, Carl Edwards, he didn't wreck him. He didn't push
you,
he just gave him a little nudge
to
get out of the way.
As they say in Days of Thunder, he didn't wreck you, he didn't hit you, he didn't bump you, he rubbed you, and rubbing sun is racing. And that's what he did. You know, Kyle Busch was running that down like he has many times before at Richmond International Raceway, and I've seen that, and he's just walked away from with events there. He knows how to run around Richmond, and that's never been a problem for him there. You know, unfortunately, with Carl Edwards there, he had a very, very strong car, led about 118, 119 laps during the day over multiple occasions. I believe it was five or six times during the course of those 400 laps that he led. And he had a very strong car out there as well as others did. You know, Kurt Busch and Kevin Harvick, others all had very strong cars, unfortunately. They just couldn't keep up with Kyle Busch and Carl Edwards there at the end. But, you know, Carl tracked him down, and he took it all the way down to that final corner off of turn four. And Carl Edwards, you know, he did it with a little bit of class. He got into the back of him. He got him just enough loose to where he could get around him. He didn't come up and run up behind him and wreck him into the wall to get around him. He just got him just enough loose to where he could get around him and beat him to the checkered flag. And you know, at that moment, it took about 30 seconds before everybody realized what exactly had happened, and it took about three or four replays between Sprint Vision and everything else to really understand what, you know, Carl Edwards had done just to get his back-to-back win out there. But, you know, Carl had a very strong car. You can't blame him in what he was doing. You know, Kyle Busch, you know, understandably upset after the incident happened out on the racetrack. And, you know, he walked away from the radio, but he did end up doing a TV interview out there. But, you know, understandably upset teammates out there. But, you know, as Carl Edwards has later stated, he's not under any team orders, and he doesn't want any team orders. And obviously by what happened on the racetrack, there is no team orders over there at JGR. Everybody needs to go for the win and do it however they need to do to get that win. But, you know, Carl Edwards, like I said, I think he did it with enough class that it shouldn't be an issue. I don't think anybody should really second guess or judge Carl for what he did. You know, there's been worse incidents out there where people have gone for wins. And, you know, Carl did what he had to do to get around him to win the race out there.
I will definitely agree, Stephen. And we've got our top of the hour guest here. We want to bring him on. Driver from McLeod Motorsports in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, number 78, Mr. B.J. McLeod. Let's bring B.J. in at pit stop. Tim Spain and Stephen Wilson.
Let's get ready to rumble!
B.J., how you doing tonight, bud? We're live from Talladega.
Good. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. And thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come on.
Oh, yeah, no, plenty of time to do this stuff. We enjoy it.
We do, too. But, B.J., if you don't mind, I'm going to hand you over to my sidekick here, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com, Mr. Stephen Wilson, because I had got to take a pit stop. So I'll be back just a minute, Stephen and B.J.
That's fine with me.
B.J., I appreciate you taking time to come on here tonight. I know it was a last-minute addition to the show. I appreciate Chris Knight for getting you on the show tonight, and I'll have to send a shout out to him later on, but I appreciate you taking the time to come on. You know, obviously leaving out of Richmond this weekend, and you're going to a 2.5 mile plus racetrack out there in Talladega. You know, it's a much different change of pace out there when you get to a place like Talladega versus to Richmond. Getting there and looking at a track like that, what exactly and how much do you change your strategy from when we connect from coming from a short track swing that has been for the last three out of the last four events to a place like Talladega, which is obviously so big you have to change your technique with the draft and everything that goes on out there?
Well, first of all, thank you guys for having me on the show, and it's always a pleasure, and Chris does a good job of helping me with this stuff, and definitely appreciate his work too. And moving on to, you know, making a change from a 7/8 mile track that has very little grip, that's really, really fun to drive on, and, you know, it's exciting, to Talladega. I guess the biggest thing is Talladega, until the race starts, you don't really get to have any fun. It's just roll out there, get wide open, ride around the bottom, and it's all on the team. And, you know, the team owner, which in this case I'm that too, to have brought a decent car and, you know, make sure that we've got all the equipment needed to be fast there, because it takes a lot of money to be fast at the super speedways, and it takes a lot of knowledge. And, you know, we're a new team getting started, and we're going to be doing our best there, but we definitely got a lot to learn. And, you know, the single car speed is just, it's really hard to obtain that on a budget like we're on. And we, you know, we just don't get too much excitement out of practice, but the second the green drops, man, and you get in that draft and you get 3, 4, you know, sometimes even 5 wide, then it's exciting and it's fun. And I mean, it's just, you know, Richmond is a technical place where you have to really focus on lift points and braking and, you know, make sure you roll fast, and it's just really smooth on the throttle because there's not much grip there. In Talladega, you just pull out, put your foot on the floor and go. So it's two really big different driving styles, but, you know, once you get to driving these things, it's not hard to switch from one to the other. I mean, it's not like I'm really successful or, you know, winning every week, but it's, you know, we race every week, we keep our cars in one piece, we're doing a great job, and we're exceeding the goals we had starting out the year for a new team, and it's not really that hard to switch from Richmond to Talladega. So, you know, it's actually a pretty interesting deal, and it's fun going down there without much pressure on you until the green drops, you know.
And you've just talked just a little bit into my second question that I had, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on going from Richmond and short tracks out there to Talladega, because it's obviously such a change when you start talking into that. But, you know, obviously this year, BJ McLeod Motorsports, you're a new team out there, but you're not new to NASCAR as a whole. You've been in the sport for a fair few amount of years. You ran last year in the Sylvania 300 and Sprint Cup Series. You've raced in Xfinity. You've raced in trucks. But this year, you've moved over into an ownership role and a driver role. You've signed on also sponsors. So, you know, this is a whole different ball game for you, you know, figuratively speaking. And when you start talking, you know, and getting into those types of roles, and not only with that, but you're also, you've got, I believe you have a Can-Am team that you've had in the past with, I believe it was Matt Tift or somebody like that, I believe, and don't quote me on that, but I believe that's who it was. You know, there's a lot that comes into this. And from your aspect of being in the driver's seat and just having to worry about driving and being that driver, but now you're the team owner and the driver, just talk a little bit about the transition of how that comes about.
Well, I guess, you know, like you said, last year, the races we ran in the Xfinity, or I ran in Xfinity as a driver and in the Cup Series as a driver, that was a lot of fun because I drove for other people, and you just, I mean, you honestly, like, go show up with your driver's bag and, you know, do the best you can to perform, and your job there is to drive the car to 100% every time you're on the track and do the best you can, no matter what budget or, you know, what your actual goals are. You do the best you can for your team. And that is honestly easy to me. It's, you know, because I'm used to dealing with all the other side of it. It's easy when you go just drive, and it takes a lot of, it's fun to be able to go and just focus on driving. And it makes it a lot easier in the seat whenever you know the team you're driving for, which, you know, most of the teams I drove for last year, definitely the 33 Cup car, they wanted me to drive. Like, they wanted me to do everything I could, and it was fun. And there wasn't no reservations because we weren't trying to build cars or, you know, get ourselves in a better place to be able to compete later on in the year. Like, it was a, you know, let's go see what you got. And I had a blast doing that stuff. But we've actually been – I've been an owner for 5 years now, just not on paper – in the truck series. Ever since 2010, we've had our own trucks, and I've drove them some, and then I drove for other people most of the time, but we did run a couple races ourselves. And even then, we weren't on the same program we are now. Then it was, we ran 3 or 5 races a year, and we went to try and run, you know, 25th, if that's the budget we had, or 20th or 15th, you know, just depending, but definitely get seat time for me and go do the best we could. And we weren't worried about bringing anything home. You know, now the biggest difference is we've got a lot of cars, but we're trying to get everything in position as a whole to make us good. And it's just it's a different game now. We're trying to get everything put together. And the Xfinity deal, running a full season in Xfinity, you know, we've got off after Talladega, then we race, then we have a week off, and then we race Charlotte. And then we go 3 weeks straight, 1 week off, and 16 weeks straight. So you have to take this time right now with us being a new team, and we didn't form the team until, you know, January 6th, somewhere in that area. We had plans back in October, November, but didn't actually start working on cars until January 6th or 8th, something like that. You know, now we're just getting to the point where we would have been when we started the season if we could have planned correctly last year. So we're trying to, you know, get caught up for starting later in the year, and it's definitely difficult to get caught up, but we're doing the best we can, and, you know, just trying to see, you know, what we can get done and what we can accomplish. And so far, I'm very happy with what our team's done. We've had a bunch of different people drive the second car, and, you know, we've had pretty much top 30s every time except for Hua Motor at California. We were running 28th or 29th then, and, you know, then Travis Kloffel drove last week at Richmond, and he finished 25th taking care of the car for me. I mean, he was under, you know, he was doing his best because we need that car for Dover, and he probably could have got a 22nd place finish out of that car, his first race in it, because he's a veteran driver, and you know, we had some help from KeenParts.com and CorvetteParts.net. You know, it was really cool to see one of my cars finish top 25, and you know, we're right there on that border with me driving, which I'm not near the driver Travis is. I'm, you know, learning. I don't have nowhere near the experience he's got, and it's great to have. You know, he's actually a friend too. And when I called him and asked him to drive the second car, he was, you know, he said, yeah, sure, I'll help you out. He's like, I love what you're trying to do. So, you know, he jumped in there and he helped us. And Jeff Green helped us the week before that at Bristol. And, you know, we've got some really good stuff going on. And, you know, honestly, as an owner, I was just trying to be top 30 this year. And I really think that once we get, if we can be smart, Talladega, take that out, because you can't, you just ride around and, you know, hopefully you don't get caught up in the big one if there is one. And, you know, those cars I'm not really concerned about. But if we can keep being smart at Dover and Charlotte and, you know, through these next couple of mile-and-a-half races and get more inventory built up, when we get into that, you know, 16-week stretch, I look for some top 20s out of both cars. So, you know, we're rapidly changing our goals, and it's just because my team is doing a great job, all my people that help me, and we're getting some support from outside people, and it's really starting to come together. So we're just going to keep plugging away here.
Now, as you just said, you know, you continuously, obviously, as the season moves on, your goals continuously change based on not only sponsorship, but, you know, how the cars are running, and you as an owner, as you continuously learn and you lean on other people within the sport, not only the ones that are driving the cars, as in Travis that ran it this past weekend at Richmond, but, you know, those that have you've worked with in the past. Now, when you start changing your goals, and, you know, some people outside of the racing world don't always understand exactly what people think. Most people think you go and offload a car and that's it. You go and run a race, and that's the end of the spectrum out there. And the business world of it all kind of comes into play later on by somebody else. But you, as we've just discussed, you take both halves into play. As goals change, as you lean into other people, just talk a little bit about those. Talk a little bit about the people that have helped you in the past that you're kind of working with and leaning on this year as you continuously learn from them and move forward through the rest of the year, and where you set your goals, not only for the rest of the year, but where you want to be at the end of the year.
Well, you know, honestly, the amount of people that have helped me is a list longer than airtime you have, I can promise. The only reason I'm here is because I've been surrounded by great people my entire life. I've been very fortunate, and just, you know, I've loved racing since before I can remember, and I know that's a big part of being good at what I do, but it's the people that I've been surrounded by that have seen my passion for the sport, and they have seen how bad I want what I'm doing, and I've been very fortunate that just unbelievable amount of people have helped me. I mean, just, you know, really, really, and we're talking about people that are, you know, in the top five of, you know, all three series. So it's, you know, it's just cool to have had all that. And we've had countless, you know, different sponsors and stuff through the last two decades that have helped us. And, you know, it's just, you know, I'm 32 years old, and I've been racing super late models since I was 13. I've been racing since I was 3. I've been in NASCAR since I was 20. I guess my first actual NASCAR race, I was 26. But I've been a part of NASCAR since I was probably 16, doing, you know, different spotting or different stuff like that. And it's, you know, it's all those people helping me is what has made it to where, you know, right now I have an Xfinity team with, you know, a good amount of cars, still a small shop, very small shop for what we have, but we've got, you know, we're getting the infrastructure to be able to be serious over the next couple of years. And I don't plan on leaving this deal. Like, you never know what's going to happen. You never know what you're going to get hit with. You never can say exactly what you're going to do. But my plans are to be here for 10 to 15 years easy. And I wanted nothing more this year than to cars to where they were, you know, all together and get the team working together and, you know, have some good drivers like Travis and Jeff help us out and just get everything working right. This year was simply make everything work the way it's supposed to year, because the way this sport is, there's people that are as dedicated as I am that have, you know, been doing this longer and they've got good help. And, you know, they're just, it's hard to just jump in here and get in with these guys. I mean, one thing to turn the TV on and watch it and be like, yeah, everybody has the same stuff, but these guys are smart. And the guys in the top five, it's not because they have more money. It, you know, that's one thing, but they're just as driven or more intelligent than we are, and we're trying to catch up and, you know, get more experience and catch them. And it's just but I love that. That's why I do it. So, it, you know, it's just this year is about learning. It's about building good relationships, keeping the great relationships that I have, keeping the network that I have with various teams and different people that help me, and, you know, just make sure that we're established to be able to run 2017 and try to be – I want to be – I know this may sound bad, but I'm only shooting for top 25 every week next year. And if we can run top 20 or top 15, then great. But realistically, with you know, looking at the way next year should go, top 25s are all we have to do to have proven that we're doing what we need to do to be better year after year. So that's what I'm shooting for. This year we were shooting for top 30s. We're already beating that. So I'm the kind of guy that, you know, says less and does more, and I strongly believe we'll be better than top 25 next year. But I don't ever say it till I do it. So we'll we're just all I can promise you is that my guys, me, the drivers that I put in the second car were all dedicated to making this deal good and one day being a contender, whether it's 5 years from now or 7 years from now. I think that in 3 years we could run at Thule or, you know, maybe a Richmond or an Iowa or something like that and be a top 10 team. And, you know, that may be crazy to hear, but that's what I believe and that's what I'm going to go after. So we're, you know, we're going to stick with modest goals because that's reality, but then it don't hurt to dream, and that's what I'm trying to do and trying to make it happen. So we're going to stick with it and see what happens.
Well, VJ, I appreciate you taking the time. I'm going to hand you over to Tim before we get you out of here. He's been sitting over there on the sidelines, and I can make sure he gets a question in before we let you go. But appreciate it. Good luck throughout the rest of 2016.
All right. Nice talking to you, man.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, BJ, Tim here. Just want to throw this out there, which I know this race week here in Dayton, but I want to talk a little bit about the Dash for Cash. You know, NASCAR implemented these heat races plus the main. Do you think that everybody is in their heats, that they're sort of just saving their equipment to actually get into the main, or do you think NASCAR needs to do something different to sort of give everybody a incentive to sort of race? Because, I mean, it's like it's just, I'm not going to say bored, it's like everybody just lines up because they don't want to get in a wreck, they don't want to mess their equipment up and not be able to do good in the main. What's your thoughts on that, BJ?
Honestly, I don't know what they could do to make it any better, because I know I think I finished 12th in my heat at Richmond, and I don't remember where I finished at Bristol, but it was, you know, top 50. It was probably like 14th or something like that. But we, you know, I drove as hard as I could, to be honest with you. I didn't, all I did was try to be really heads up on making sure I didn't knock the nose off on a restart or something. But as soon as it got single file, I passed cars in the heat at Bristol and Richmond. So I, you know, I drove as hard as I could. As far as the guys up front competing for the Dash for Cash, there's no doubt that those first four or five are giving it all they got to make sure they're locked in for the Dash for Cash. So, you know, that's keeping the front part of the field going. And then, you know, I know teams like me, we're all trying to, we use that heat race for a test, and you need to pass cars to know what you need to be better. So, you know, honestly, on my side of it, from, you know, being in the car, I think that it's about as entertaining as it's going to get, because one thing about NASCAR is you have such good drivers that, you know, the 20th place driver in each heat is, you know, a very good driver. And it's, you know, that's why there's not a lot of beating and banging and everything, because in the heat races, naturally, people are going to try to take care of their bodies and stuff to make sure you got good stuff for the feature. But it, you're never going to see a ton of excitement in a heat race, no matter what track you go to. It's, you know, if you look, when I used to run heat races at my short tracks on, Saturday night, Friday night, you know, New Smyrna Speedway, Orlando Speed World, DeSoto, different places like that in Central Florida, everybody in the heat race, you know, there was hardly ever any action because you have to make the feature to get points. So it's, you know, it's never going to be that bump and run type deal you've seen with Carl and Kyle in the heat race. You know, I don't see that happening. And I like the heat races. I think it's cool to mix it up a little bit. I've always been a, you know, qualifying list kind of guy, but you know what? It, we're happy that Dash for Cash is there. We're happy to do the heat races, and it, it was definitely entertaining. You know, it was something different and fun to do. And, you know, I definitely hope the fans liked it. So we, you know, we enjoy doing it, and I don't really know how you can make it better, to be honest with you.
And AJ, I would like to get your take on Bristol. You know, you mentioned Bristol Motor Speedway with, that was the first Dash for Cash. As everybody knows, turns 1, 2, and 3, and 4 are concrete, and the track didn't really take rubber all that well like it normally does. I don't know if it was a tire compound or whatever, but this past weekend at Richmond, NASCAR brought a softer tire compound, and as the weekend went on through practices and all that stuff, the track really took rubber. And this is the first time that we've actually seen cars go up and, you know, 2 and 3 wide at Richmond International. Did that make a big deal there at Richmond? And what did you actually think about the groove actually spreading out, going back to the high side, whereas versus everybody running on the low side that we had to play the gears for you?
Well, I think it's always more interesting whenever you can run all over the track. I hope they bring the same tire back in, I think we go back in August, is it? Something like that. I think you know, it just makes it more exciting. Like, I love running all over the track, and I actually wasn't running the, you know, I actually started running the top, well, middle to the top. I wasn't all the way up there, but I started running it because I went to 1 and got free, and it drifted up, and it gripped better, and I was like, all right. So then we started running up there for a little bit, but that's the cool part of racing NASCAR is, you know, all the tracks are clean from bottom to top, you know, maybe minus 2 or 3 feet at the very top on a short track, but your mile and a half, you're clean all the way to 6 inches off the wall. So, I mean, that's the coolest thing about running NASCAR, the different tracks they go to is, you know, some, like, you can just jump up there and run the top. Brendan Gaughan passed me, when he was lapping me, I was in the middle of the track, and he was 2 car lengths above me, wide open, you know, just kind of like he was on dirt. So it was entertaining. I enjoyed it. I'm glad that we had that.
Yeah. And, AJ, I know your time is limited, but I've got my good friend on, Ronnie over here. He does a show on Minus Stevens Network, Speedway Digest Radio Network, every Monday night. He covers all the ARCA stuff for us. Do you have time to take a question from Ronnie?
Yes, definitely. No problem.
Okay. All right, we're going to bring Ronnie, which is, his nickname is Rowdy Maglock, doing the pit stop with Tim and Spain and Steven.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Rowdy, how you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing great. Doing great. My light is shining. I can't, tomorrow night, hopefully I'll be in Talladega.
We can't wait to see you up here, bud. Rowdy, I just told Big Devin Crowd that you do our ARCA series. You cover all the ARCA series stuff on our radio network on Monday night. Anyway, you got the floor with Big Devin Crowd here right quick before we let him go.
My question, are you a super speedway guy or short track? And why?
I like, as a driver, I prefer short tracks because I just like the technicality of them, you know, and it's, you know, it's just more fun for me. But, you know, this is kind of a double-edged sword because I love the speed of Talladega, Daytona in the draft, and, you know, even more importantly, like a Charlotte or a Vegas or that type track where you get a little bit of air, you know, or actually quite a bit of air, and you're running 180 mile an hour. So I can't really be too partial to one or the other. I'm definitely a better driver on the short tracks than I am the mile and a half, but then I feel like Talladega, Daytona, you know, give me a couple of years and, you know, get 6, 7 races under my belt, and I could be okay at the draft there. So it, I have to say, kind of a boring answer, man. I like them all.
Well, you know, each one of them's got their own character. What about a road course? What do you think about a road course?
Man, I'll tell you a funny story about road course. I never been on a road course in my life on anything to do with a stock car or a racing go-kart. Like, I've been to the little go-kart tracks you go to, every town you go to with a racetrack. But, you know, really racing on a road course, I'd never done it. In 2014, Bobby Dodder asked me to go and do a deal in an 07, I think it was 08 or 07 truck at Mossport. And I just said yes. I didn't tell him that I'd never been on a road course and anything. And you know, we when I pulled on the track for practice there, that was the first time in my life I'd ever been on a road course. And I pull out in Camping World Truck Series practice with these guys that are like, they know what they're doing, not messing around. And I was, my first lap, the fastest guy there, which was, I think it was Tagliani, I was 11 seconds off my first lap. I was 9 seconds off my second lap, 5 seconds off my third lap, and then I stayed about 4 seconds off of him, anywhere from right around 20th quick, somewhere in that area. And it was the funnest racing that I'd ever done in my life. Like, it was, I think it was because I was new to it that I was so excited about it, and it was such a challenge. And honestly, I was pretty bad at it. Like, I was trying to get it all figured out. But I think I had the best time ever driving on a road course. So I think that, you know, if it's just all out driving, definitely a road course is my favorite, because it's just so much, it takes so much talent, man. Like, it's just a different, like, it's fast. Like Mossport, you run 170 down that long straightaway going up the hill. And then, you know, two turns later, you're running 30 mile an hour trying to get forward bike in first gear. You know, like, it's just a, it's an awesome thing to do, to get to run those road courses, and I'm glad they're a part of the series.
Well, I haven't done a road course, and I'm looking forward to it, because I've kind of gotten excited about the road courses. But, hey, I'm listen, like Tim said, I host a radio show on Monday nights, Rowdy Maglite Racing. Looking forward to hopefully meeting you this weekend at Talladega, and good luck.
Yes, sir. Make sure you stop by and see us.
I sure will. Sure will. Thanks, Tim.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you, Rowdy. We'll see you this weekend. Okay, that was our good friend, Rowdy Maglite. Stephen, do you have any last thoughts for BJ before we let him go?
Stephen, can you hear me somewhere?
Can you hear me,
BJ?
Okay. All right, BJ. Stephen's probably working on something. Anyway, BJ, thanks again for taking time out. And we will definitely look you up in Dega. We'll be in the media center. I'm going out Thursday, so I will definitely look you up whenever y'all get there. But as we do every week, every driver, whoever we have on, we'll let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media and your website. BJ, you got the floor, bud.
Yeah. Facebook is BJ McLeod Motorsports, and Twitter is at BJ McLeod 78 and at Team BJ McLeod. So, guys, check it out.
That sounds good, bud. Take care. Safe travels down to Dega. We will see you this weekend, bud.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on.
You're welcome, BJ. That was BJ McLeod, travel number 78, I think Chevrolet. That's right. In the series, BJ McLeod Motorsports. Stephen, we're coming up here. We got a – Linda, have you got the TV coverage? Stephen must not be there. I think he sent me a text. His mic stopped working. Okay, he don't know what's going on. So Stephen, I don't have it, but just want to let everybody know. Tim Spain and Suzanne will be at the Super Speedway this weekend. We will be covering everything from the ARCA Series, NASCAR Xfinity Series, and the Sprint Cup Series. And we're not going to make our pick tonight because Stephen's mic quit. I don't know what's going on. I don't. That bunch up there in Richmond, I don't know. But anyway, next Tuesday night on the show, we have a driver for Will Kimmel Racing, Bill Kimmel Racing, Mr. Will Kimmel, and also my good friend from NBCSports.com, Mr. Jerry McReynolds. Mr. Jerry Barncaster will be on next Tuesday night, and we'll probably have some additions to the show. But anyway, tune in next Tuesday night, and we will have all your coverage from Talladega Super Speedway. So as of right now, good night from Talladega, Alabama.
was the summer before the real world started, and the deal was we would get to go if we cleaned it up and got it running. That is old Winnebago. And winging a prayer down a 65, my best friend on four ball ties. I can still see Billy smiling when we finally made it to Talladega. Boys raised us, whiskey and gold glass. Now here's to turning up or slowing down in cars that go real fast. We were laughing and living, drinking and wishing and thinking that checkered flag was waving. Sure would like to stay Talladega. Like a stone, time rolls on. You can't hit pause, asking just to do. Most days in life don't stand out, but life's about those days that we all lack. Rockin' Randall, getting rowdy, shooting Roman candles at the man in the moon till the Alabama sun was breaking.
Waking up to smells of burnt rubber, smoldering campfire, and barbecue sauce. I was there. Cheering on the drivers you love and booing the ones you don't. While watching them battle the baddest track in NASCAR. You can bet I was there. Escape reality for a weekend at Talladega.
Experience the Geico 500 April 29th through May 1st. Call 877-GO-TO-DEGA or visit TalladegaSuperspeedway.com.